Good evening, friends. Welcome back to the front porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I'm joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How was your Monday?
Excellent, Dennis. Having a great time. Sid was here for the week for spring break, and got to do some good stuff. We went and watched. What did we watch? The new Ghostbusters film, which was cool. Yep. And we'll talk about that in a little while later. And played
some games. You talked about that last week.
Oh, did we? Okay, yeah. We did that.
Just in case you're, I edited our last week's show just a couple hours ago, and so that's how I know. I don't know if I would have remembered.
Obviously, my memory is the worst. So we watched that one. We were gonna go see Godzilla, but we just didn't get working on because the new Godzilla X Kong is out.
Rise of the
Planet of the Apes. Yeah, I'm not totally certain. It seems very pro Kong, so I'm against it because I'm on Team Godzilla.
# Team Lizard.
Team Reptiles.
I started talking and realized I didn't actually have a bit.
I'm just not on # Team Vampire or Werewolf, so I'll pick Team Lizard. That works fine for me.
I don't know if it still exists, but there used to be a website called T-Fury.
Okay.
Like T, like angry t-shirts. T-E-F-U-R-Y.
Okay.
And they would do limited run, like a new shirt a day or once a week or something like that. And some of them would come back sometimes, but it was always like, you can get this and then you can get this today and then they're gone. And I had a great one that I wore all the time for years that was in the style of Calvin and Hobbes, right? If you remember the Bill Watterson cartoons, or comics, newspaper comics, but it was Han and Chewie riding on a little like red wagon sized Millennium Falcon, right?
And, oh, nice.
And Calvin was Han and Chewie was Hobbes. Yeah. And it was great. You know, I'd get compliments from people in public on that, but their shtick a lot of the times was a mashup, right? Like you had to get both references. I had one I did not wear as often that was the fourth Doctor Who fighting with Harry Potter with like wand versus sonic screwdriver, and their scarves were tangled up because Harry has the Gryffindor scarf and the fourth Doctor famously had a really long scarf. That one was a little more obscure.
Always thinking there, Dennis, always thinking.
Right. And I swear I had a connection to whatever you were saying when I started telling this anecdote. What were you just talking about?
Godzilla cross King Kong.
Godzilla and Kong. Oh, the Edward. So one of the ones they had was a like black and white shadowed picture of Edward James Olmos, who's Admiral or Adama. Commander Adama in the new BSG, and the text underneath it said Team Edward. Right,
I get it.
It's not that was too much time to set up context for that bit, but it was a funny.
Kids who can now are of drinking age don't know Team Edward, Team whatever. Isn't that old? Is that it's?
Maybe it depends on. It depends on their parents. I was having a conversation about this with...
It's so funny. Their parents could literally be the age that Team Edward was.
Well, that's what I mean. If they're like... I mean, I don't know. When did the Twilight...
I want to say it was around 2000, but...
Oh, 08.
Okay.
The books maybe were a little earlier.
Sure.
So, you know, if... If someone's parents were in their early 20s in 2008 and had a kid and named her Bella, that kid would be 12, 16.
Jeez.
Oh, no.
They're going through their own Edward and stuff.
Right,
now.
Right. But I was having this conversation with my sister, Sarah, who...
Like Dennis said, oh, no, just real quietly.
I was just surprised because I ballparked 12 and was way off.
oh, no.
My sister is 39 this year. And... we were talking about names, like who kids, you know, she doesn't have kids either. And like, you know, she was surprised that more friends, you know, people she knows her age, our age, she's 5 years younger than me. So, is that right? That can't be, whatever.
math is hard for you tonight, Dennis.
Yeah. Well, it's early in the year and whatever. She said she was surprised she didn't hear about more kids named after Harry Potter characters, right? Like Harry's and Ron's and Hermione's.
Oh yeah, sure. And not a single Hermione have I seen running around.
Yeah, and my armchair theory on that is compared to parents naming their kids after Twilight characters, the Harry Potter movies are for kids. I mean, they start like somewhere between kid to middle grade or shonen, middle school age, which is in publishing, middle grade is what goes between children's books and YA, young adult.
Oh, yeah.
And so the characters are like 10 or 11 at the start of the book, start of the films, and then they're graduating high school by the end. Where the Twilight books are solidly YA, right? They're high school, and I don't know if they're out of high school by the end. I only saw the first movie. And so I think that, like, this is just completely my theory, is that, you know, that the age of the person, of the potential parents, when they watched those movies, the YA series might embed or impact on them in the way that would make them name their kids after characters in that series.
I mean, that's fair.
I don't know if that's true. Like, maybe more likely to name a kid after something you enjoyed as a teenager or an adult versus something you enjoyed as a kid. Maybe.
Yes. No, that's very true. And without specifics, my ex-wife and I named one of our kids. Well, they got the name. We didn't name him after somebody, but we were watching a show. We were in, well, at that time we were early 30s. But we watched a show in our late 20s. And it was around that, for that age range, you know, 20 something. And the lead character we really thought was awesome. And then we liked that name and we named our kid. Not necessarily after that person or that character, but it was watching those shows, which made us think that we liked that thing. But if we were, I don't think I would ever name my kid after someone that was like a teenager in a show, or, you know, a Blue's Clues character or something, you know, I wouldn't call him Steve type thing. But I wouldn't call my kid Steve anyway. But no offense to all you Steves out there. You're fine people.
I don't remember how she and I got on this conversation, because she, for a little while, dated a guy named Steve.
I know Steve, yeah.
And okay. I think they had conversations, I don't know what level of jokiness, that if they had stayed together, he would want to take her last name, our last name.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you,
Steve Rogers, nice.
If you connect the dots there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And my brother named his son Steven. Yeah. It's his fourth kid. And so, like, some of the other family were like, what, really? You know, like a thing. Like, David, when they found out they were having their first, he told Andrew and I that they were going to name her Felicity, after the character from Flash and Arrow,
oh, yeah,
CW shows. because he liked that character, and Andrew and I both did not. And we're like, no, you're not. You're really, are you like, I think Andrew was legitimately angry.
that he and, would have to call that.
And it was a joke, right? They didn't actually do that. They used family names for the first couple. And I'm like, by the time you get to third or fourth kid, who cares? Name them whatever. Like,
I had family friends growing up, you know who does care? That kid when they have to grow
kid,
up, right?
That kid. I had a friend, more my friend's older sister, who was really closer to my age, but of course when you're like 10, I think we moved away from living close to them. I was like 12. When you're 10 or 12, you don't really have friends that are girls. If they have a brother, right. The brother's friend, right?
Gross girls, right?
In the 80s, anyway, 80s, early 90s. Anyway, her name is Leia, like spelled, spelled exactly the same. And I think it's actually spelled like Lee.
Oh,
and Leia spelled with an I, but maybe that was like a. But they pronounced it Leia. And
I would if I was younger, name my kid Leia. That'd be cool.
Sure. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. We're way off on a tangent.
we tangent that one there. So what have you been doing this week? You say you're in town. We're gonna for where we are, and you are. Currently is in the Indiana area.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that we are in like the solid path of totality for the eclipse that's going to happen here.
As they say.
And we are recording this on Dennis Rogers Day, called April Fool's Day. See what mm-hmm. I did there?
Mm-hmm.
Good but one. April 1st. And we have one this time next week, we will be through the path of totality. We're having actually so many people come into town, and you know, there's some doubt to how big it's going to be. People are, you know, overestimating it. But what I've heard of other places that, you know, have gone through this kind of thing, that it actually is lots and lots of people. I'm having three people in my house come from Chicago all the way down, just to watch this thing. And we're going to have, you know, obviously a weekend of playing games and hanging out and doing stuff like that. But it's so funny. I thought today of like, here we are, you know, every time in the past, it was a holy day that this astronomical phenomenon happened, and it was the holy spirits were coming into the world, and, you know, or someone was casting an evil curse or something, and they'd have big celebrations or stuff. Here we are still having get togethers and groups because just, you know, the sun happens to, you know, cast a shadow.
Right? I saw an interesting TikTok video, or it might have been YouTube, whatever, it doesn't matter. Somebody saying that it's actually an interesting phenomenon, coincidence, however you want to describe it, that we have solar eclipses.
Really?
Because for it to happen, the moon in the sky has to be almost the same size as the sun in the sky.
And oh, that's true.
We all know the sun is much, much larger than the moon, but from our perspective, they're very close to the same size, so that when they're lined up just right, the moon blocks out all of the sun except for the corona, or that's something else. Corona, yeah. And that in another few thousand years, whatever, because the moon is slowly moving away in its orbit, like half an inch a year or something. I don't know if it's that much. That eventually it won't be anymore. It'll be like a ring.
Yeah.
You know, the sun will still show in a ring around the moon's shadow.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's interesting.
Man. Well, that I did not think about that. Like the size.
What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. That's right.
When we understand that a total eclipse of the heart is not Hades and Zeus arm wrestling,
fighting it out.
but is still a thing we can look at and be amazed by.
Yeah, it is pretty cool, actually. I mean, I'm not excited. It's not an exciting word, but I like space things anyway, and astro, mm-hmm. you know, like going out and seeing the full moon. Every time I see the full moon, I think it's amazing. It's so silly just because it's the way the world at night changes, and this is all boring podcast stuff, but it's very cool for me to look at.
It's a time in the cycle, the circadian cycle is probably not the right word for that, where it should be dark, right? It's usually dark, and every once in a while, if you live in the right place where there's not enough artificial light, you go outside and you're like, it's not, why isn't it dark?
You see the
whole dark
world,
but it's not, right? Yeah, it's still dark, but not as dark as it normally is.
Yeah. And then you have the big halo sometimes will come around if you see it at certain things around the moon. And I don't know, those things are pretty neat. And I've been through partial eclipses a lot through my life, but sure. Not until the last one that just happened about, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago or some kind of nonsense, did I recognize the whole leaf thing on the trees, the shadow thing.
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I knew about that one, but this last, I want to say 2017, which was 7 years ago, was the first time I've been in a total eclipse. I've seen the partials where you you could see the shadows of leaves on the pavement change, or you can do, when I was a kid, I made a box, I took an old refrigerator box and did a pinhole thing. Yeah. You cut a hole and put a paper and put a pin, basically you're making a small circular shadow.
Yeah.
And then you put that box over your head and you stand so you can see that shadow. And you can see the partial eclipse in the shadow without, you know, looking at the sun.
Yeah. Right? I just had a nice image of young Dennis Rogers putting a cardboard box over his head, looking to the side through a pinhole to see that. That was pretty awesome. Thanks for that, Dennis. That was a good, the whole week is made now that I got that impression.
Happy to help.
So anyway, if I would do want to say for those listening, I don't know what they're talking about with that stuff. When an eclipse happens, when the sun passes or the moon passes in front of the sun during the day, it will also make all of the shadows of leaves from the tree look like they're little eclipses. And yeah. You may think I'm lying or that's not true. It absolutely is. And it freaked me out. And I could not get past it. I took videos. The eclipse was happening, and I could not get over looking at the ground, you know, the whole time. Taking videos, taking pictures of it, and I just go Google that stuff, guys. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's just every leaf in the tree, the shadows on the ground are little bitty eclipses, every single one. That's really neat. So anyway, we are going to do that. We haven't decided how we're going to see it. I do know that. It's pretty cool. I saw on the map that the eclipse goes right through my backyard, like the 100% line type thing.
Nice.
Which, you know, I did not know until semi-recently when I think a friend of ours had mentioned it. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's part of the reason why I've got friends coming to stay. They're going to just sit in my backyard and watch it. Nice. But we're going to be doing some games this weekend, and we're all playing eclipse themed games and watching eclipse themed movies.
Of course,
I find these kind of things I find funny because they're just it's so silly why we have excuses for get-togethers and things like that. But I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, this one is a big, as you said, you've got friends coming down from Chicago. It's I heard people say last time that most people say if you're going to travel to see an eclipse, you want to get into totality. Otherwise, there's no difference between a 70% coverage and a 50% coverage. It's still just the shadow of the leaves on the ground. That's going to be just as cool from your yard as it is to traveling anywhere. And so people want to get to the total coverage. And of course, our friends Fox and his family enjoy coming to Bloomington. All three of them do, and hanging out and playing games and all that. So, of course, they'll take the excuse to do both.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll take an excuse to hang out with friends. So yeah, we're gonna do that this weekend, and we'll report back next week what game, if we play anything new or do anything fun. That'll be neat. Do you want to go ahead? We haven't talked really much too much about movies. Do you want to go talk about our movie this week?
Sure. All right. This week we watched Warm Bodies from 2013, directed by Jonathan Levine, who made a bunch of stuff I've never heard of. So that's producer. Director. Show me director. Previous. Screen Junkies?
No, you made Screen Junkies? Is that what you're saying?
No. Screen Junkies TV show. I don't know. Whatever. starring Nicholas Holt, Teresa Palmer, John Malkovich, Rob Corddry, Dave Franco, probably a couple others in here, but it's mainly Nicholas Holt and Teresa Palmer.
You mean Beast Nicholas Holt?
That's, I thought he looked familiar.
Yes. Yeah. He's the Beast from the new X-Men movies. It's funny enough. I just watched, like,
I've not seen most of those, X teens.
Well, I'm going through watching the 90, not X-Men 97 that's out right now. I'm watching the X-Men animated series from the 90s, like the original one.
And he's in The Great. That's, I thought he looked familiar.
He's in a couple things.
Yeah, with Elle Fanning about Catherine the Great in Russia.
Yeah. I'm generally not a big Nicholas Holt fan, but I think it's just because he's young, but as he gets older, he'll be fine. Kind of like many other, like a Chalamet type thing. But he's fine. And also, I didn't really care for his Beast, but whatever. Anyway, I'm watching the X-Men. I know we're getting a little off the topic of the movie here, but I was watching the X-Men series because I want to watch I never got to see the animated series, or I never really paid attention to it when it was out, even though I'm a comic book nerd. And I am watching them, and I got through some Apocalypse stuff, and I was like, I remember that there was an X-Men Apocalypse movie, and it was not great, but I can't remember why. So I'm going to go watch it again. And I watched it like 2 days ago. So, and lo and behold, Nicholas Holt was in that one as well. But, and it's fine. It's a fine movie, you know.
Sure.
It's a non Marvel universe movie. So Fox. Okay. So this film, Nicholas Holt was good in it. Actually, this was one I did like him in. Because I think I don't have a lot of deep things to say about this film. Like, oh, the cinematography, the directing was good, the acting. Because I just really enjoyed it. Like, I just enjoyed watching it. It's cute. I kind of like films that do the internal narration while they're, you know, like, what's the person thinking while they're doing that kind of thing. In general, I think that's a fun mechanism. And this does it really well here.
It's funny. I didn't think about that while I was watching it, but after our conversation last week about Dune, I wonder, this is an adaptation from a novel, and I kind of assume the novel is written in first person from R's point of view.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for this because he, for a lot of the film, can't really talk.
Yeah.
And so, like, you have to use voiceover. But it works really well. I mean, this is a weird movie. This is a zombie love story.
Which I've never seen before.
And yeah, I don't think I have either.
And I've not seen a zombie movie where, like, well, to, I guess it's not a spoiler. It's kind of a thing where zombies are kind of becoming more human, going back the other way. I've never seen a zombie movie like that too. So.
Yeah. The closest parallel I have is True Blood, which is a bad example, but where the monsters have a sort of redemption, story. Although that's in that series, it depends on the character, right?
Yeah.
That's less like vampires aren't mindless, right? So it's not a good comparison, but
sure.
But yeah,
this had a I guess never before I see where zombies can think like they're actual,
right?
You know, they're thinking things. But besides, let's say like smart zombies or whatever, like they have their own thoughts and dreams and desires and things. And I know that's just a goofy little kitsch with this one, but I liked it. I thought that was a neat. It's kind of a very original way to think of things. And I'm not a general like monster movie all the time kind of guy, vampires and werewolves and stuff. Like I like watching them fine depending on the story, but they don't tend to, you know, make me like, oh, I want to watch a zombie movie or whatever. And this one was great. I liked that they were zombies and they went back, and I liked the ending without spoiler parts of it. I like how he progresses, and it's a little silly with, you know, the reason why they're getting more human like or whatever. But it was just cute in that way. I mentioned to you earlier that it reminded me of I forgot already. You told me, what's the name of the show that I mentioned? It was with the monsters. Love and Monsters. That, like, it reminded me of that. That it's kind of got some realistic things to it because there's big scary monsters and they kill people type stuff. But it's about a silly thing with a boy trying to find love in a crazy, dangerous world. You know, it, silly as that is, and I just loved it so much. By the way, we were talking about the inner monologue narrator over voice. I'm really looking forward to a movie that's coming out called Boy Kills World. There's a trailer for it, and I can't remember if it's a zombie or a post-apocalyptic. I can't remember the setting, but this guy is he's a deaf and mute orphan, and he wants to kick ass and be awesome. So he decided to give. He's never heard people before, so he gives his own inner voice a badass voice. So he starts talking in his head like a total badass, and that voice is narrated by H. John Benjamin, which is Archer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man, I love a voiceover for somebody's inner voice head to be Archer. That is going to be so much fun.
Have you ever seen him act? You must have. He was in the original Wet Hot American Summer.
Well, I will say this, not until the last couple of years did I watch Archer. So I would not have known Archer doing a thing.
Yeah, he was in an episode, he was in a short trek. I don't know if you remember that.
No,
but
that
was
really?
probably before you watched Archer. It's weird to see him in person acting because, I didn't know about him before Archer. And so when I hear the voice, I picture Archer, and he doesn't look anything like Archer.
No, not at all. Yeah. I love Archer.
And so it's jarring to hear. It's like when you see like a radio person on TV person to match with the voice.
Archer and Rick and Morty are two shows that from an outside looking in type perspective, they look terrible, and that I would never want to watch those kind of shows. But they are like quite truly some of my favorite animated TV shows ever that I've watched. And when I watched them, I waited years before they, everybody, the fad had passed and nobody cared about that stuff anymore. And I gave him a chance and I was like, oh, actually, I'll give credit to Archer to you because I think we were over at the house one day and put it on. It might have been you. And
oh, yeah. I was staying there and we played some Super Nintendo and I was like, okay, we're going to watch Archer.
And we watched Archer and I loved like one or two episodes we watched. And I was like, this is not what I thought it was. And then after that, I was like, Archer all the way. And sad that it's over, but you know, all to all good things, there must come an end. Okay, back to the show. Like I said, I liked it. I don't have pointers on all of the why it's good, just good the guy barely grunts and stuff, and the his opposite lead, the girl, is nice. I like the best friend. What's, I can't remember the best friend's name.
He's a Kim.
Kim. He's a comedian and
Rob Corddry.
Yep, and he's just kind of great and likable in his facial expression. They got to do a lot of facial acting, but not really facial acting type stuff.
I think of what I know him most from: Children's Hospital, Hot Tub Time Machine.
Hot Tub Time Machine. I think that's one I know him from.
History of the World Part 2. I think he's one of those who came up through improv or something. And so he plays a lot of these kind of roles.
Well, he was good. He helped make the film good as well.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, you know, pretty small part, but he put. I mean, just some of the reactions and the faces. You're like, oh man, how are they not? Like, I want to see the outtakes. Cause I'm like, how are they not cracking up? This scene is amazing.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of like he's one of those things that, you know, when he's his buddy, it's kind of like on his team type thing, and like when he starts to kind of want to be a good guy, I guess, you know, this guy kind of support the other zombie supports him, and you're like, oh, this is a, they actually, not just this, he's not one zombie that has this weird feelings type thing, this, it's kind of other people are also getting it too, and other zombies and stuff, and he was the one that was one of the first, I think. But so what did you think? I'm assume good, yes, thumbs up for this one?
Yeah, I mean, I saw this in the theater, and I
did not. I would have loved to. That would have been a good one to put my money in.
I don't think I've seen it since then, but I remembered liking it at the time. It's very I didn't think about this until just now, but do you remember a movie we watched called Yesterday?
Yes. With the Beatles thing?
Yeah, with the Beatles, where he wakes up in a parallel universe where the Beatles never existed.
Yep.
This reminds me a little bit of that, where the lore and the setting, the world building of it, because I don't know whether zombies are sci-fi or fantasy, probably somewhere in between, depending. Is not important at all. It 100% takes a backseat to this love story, sort of love story.
Yeah.
And I had no problem with that. And it also, I was talking to my sister again about Argyle, which she hasn't seen. She's only seen the trailer and was kind of excited for it. And so I was like, oh yeah, it's good. It's good for an hour and then goes on for another hour and 20. this movie is 98 minutes long, Warm Bodies, which is good. Like, it, as some would say, it doesn't overstay its welcome. Like,
right.
It does what it wants to do. It has some action. It has some heartwarming scenes, and unlike, oh, I don't know, this is a generalization, but unlike most zombie films, ends on a positive, like, it has a happy ending.
It does,
right? Like most, not necessarily that zombie films end in tragedy. Like, usually, this was the thing I thought when I started trying to watch The Walking Dead. I was like, boy, maybe there's a reason most zombie fiction is like the characters surviving a night, and then if they make it through the night, help shows up or whatever. Like they make it through this darkness and are like, you know, okay, now maybe things are going to be okay. So it's not that all zombie films I've seen have a tragic ending, but this, I mean, I don't want to really spoil the ending, but because we're not in spoilers, but it's fairly wholesome for a zombie story.
I think so for a zombie right. film. It's right. I mean, I'd show this to a teenager, like a 12-year-old, no problem.
Yeah.
I don't want to say much more anything else about some spoilers.
Right, right. unless we go into spoilers, which I don't think is necessary.
No, I don't think so. It's just, I like the word wholesome for it. You know, some directors, I think when they go to make a film, they are sometimes want to make their opus with every single film. It's got to be like something special and spectacular and huge. And sometimes I like the idea, you mentioned like 98 minutes. I like the idea that they come out and they make a film that tells a story, does a thing. It does all it's supposed to do. And then that's the film, you know, that it doesn't have to be Lord of the Rings with every film you make. Right.
Right.
And that's what happens when you make a film that is supposed to be 98 minutes and then you make it 3 hours. Sometimes you're like, why did you need it? Right. Or you have the Peter Jackson Hobbit type situations.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Lord of the Rings things, you know, just sometimes guys in Hollywood, it's okay to make a short film. Maybe sometimes that's an executive producer's job is to come in and say, hey, keep track of this. We intentionally want to make a nice little zombie movie that's, 90 minutes and not 3 hours, guys, or whatever, you know.
Right.
And not just zombie movies, but other things too, you know. Don't overstay your welcome. And a lot of times that will make a film better to watch because I didn't have to spend all the time in it. And I usually never complain about long movies, but long movies that are just, I loved your Argyle thing. Like it was done, not done, but it was like, you were good for this long and then you just lost it. And I wish you would have just stuck with that amount of time, you know, then they'd be much better. Right. Anyway, thumbs up for Warm Bodies. I would watch it again. We'll watch it again. It is, which again, I say to me is always a compliment. If it's another thing that I watch again, watch with other people who haven't seen it. Like, oh, you haven't seen Warm Bodies? Yeah, we'll definitely watch that one. It's a cute show. So thumbs up for me. Would watch again. What? And I think it's thumbs up for you too, right? Yeah. Would recommend to people.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So it's your pick next.
Oh, well, this was the easy one we talked about last week because you hadn't seen Beetlejuice yet. And Beetlejuice 2 is going to come out. And so we're going to watch that one. I will reiterate the thoughts I said last week. That, you know, some people talk about this film as the holy grail of films. And, you know, you must watch it. And, oh, my God, it's a classic of all things. I personally don't believe that of Beetlejuice. I really like Beetlejuice. Watched it multiple times. We'll watch it again lots and lots of times. I love the film. But I just don't think it's like everything is amazing and incredible. It's just fun, like 80s or early 90s kind of film that was fun to watch at the time. So I'm looking forward to watching it with you because you have, it's almost like an untainted perspective besides pop culture references, which you know so many of them, to see, is this actually a good movie? Here we are like 500 years later, you know, is this an actual good movie? Without any kind of nostalgia glasses on it. Beetlejuice. We'll watch that one. By the way, you're not supposed to say it three times, but I did anyway.
Right. That's the one bit I know.
Yeah, it's the one thing. There are a bunch of little bits, which I think are the thing about it. Is it to just, there's sure. little bitty bits all the way through it that are kooky and silly. Almost kind of look at like a Saturday Night Live. You know, back then they used to do a lot of Saturday Night Live skits that turned into films. This wasn't one of them, but it kind of feels like it was. Type stuff. I watched, switching over to something else, I wanted to give a little quick review of Avatar The Last Airbender. Sydney and I finally watched it all. We watched the first episode separate, and then she came for spring break, and we decided we were going to watch it together. I'm talking about the live action remake of Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix. There was some concern about this thing because early on the creators walked away from the film and Netflix decided that. Because they had creative differences. Creators having creative differences is not a good thing for a film.
Original, like the original creators of the Nickelodeon
series, right? Series, which is beloved and everyone loves, including myself. So, and Sid, that's why Sid and I sat down and watched it, because we both watched the whole series, original series, through, loved it, you know, a bunch, and we're excited for this one. So it walked away, didn't have a lot of good things about it, citing creative differences, and reviews have been somewhat mixed. Not that I'm watching a lot of them, but it was hard to ignore. So we sat down and watched it. It's 8 episodes long, I think. I think they're like hour-long episodes or something. Okay. I will say the first, I'd say maybe 3 episodes, I wasn't a fan. Like, it was really, and it really come down to the actors. A lot of it reminds me of the M. Night Shyamalan movie, which was awful, just awful, awful. And right. Which is not a good thing to say about this, right? Yeah. And I can see them, the creators, walking away for that reason only. Like, seriously, it's them seeing same things happening and being like, I don't want to be a part of this again, where I backed the first project all the way through and it was awful. And we knew it was awful. And now they can see this one and they're like, no, we're walking away. I can see if that was why they did. And I don't want to like tear it down in that way. I just want to say that the actors feel very unproven. They aren't, and the director itself aren't helping the young actors.
Okay, sure.
Sokka is one of them. He's a character that in the original series, his character can be very annoying and overbearing and the older brother and kind of a jerk. But he's not that way because the voice actor and the animation of the anime was boisterous and funny and goofy and silly. He's one that would like say something mean to his sister and then turn around and trip over a stone and fall on his face. Right? Like, oh, you're okay. Mean and bully. And then you fell over because you're a goof.
Sure. Right, little instant karma kind of.
Yeah, right. And that makes it like, oh, he's so goofy and silly. We don't take him seriously type stuff. And then he has character arcs throughout the series that makes him, you know, you have a character that you just toss off as comedic relief. And then he actually has development. And by the end, you're like, I like this guy. I'm on his team. And I think he's, you know, really come a long way type stuff. Well, in the M. Night Shyamalan film, and in this series, they don't get that at all. They are not, at least what I'm seeing, is they're not getting Sokka's character. And the kid is trying to play him as an upset, angry, trying to be the boss, older brother all the time. And like, I don't want this kid to be along for the ride the whole time. Okay. So that's exactly what was a problem. So a lot of that was the characters, the actors not understanding how to perform the role. And the director not giving us more of those acting tips or setups and things like that. So first 3 episodes, I was like, kind of powering through this. I don't think it's going to be great. About 4 or 5 episodes in, it starts to get a little bit better because I think the main character, namely Aang and Katara, settle down. The actors do. They're becoming comfortable with their characters. They're not trying to write what's on the script. A lot of times it felt like it's a high school play where you're watching a high school play. And in the script, the thing says, Katara says excitedly. So Katara, the actress, says this thing with a fake excited over the top type thing. And you're like, oh, that's probably what the script said to do. It wasn't natural. Sure. Type stuff. Right. About halfway through the show, I think that starts to kind of go away and they start to actually act like some of the characters and it feels a lot more natural again, especially Aang. And also the main bad guy, I'll say antagonist, and that Zuko is just, you know, not great as an actor, but then about 4 or 5 episodes in, he softens up. The character himself starts getting a little bit more depth. The actor starts actually doing some acting. And it's still not great. But they add more characters into the mix besides the main ones. And when they have, I'll say adults to act off of, it starts to be better, right? It's not just these teenagers. Okay. And sure. I'm like, oh, they're feeding off the other actors, and it's a better situation. And then by the last 2 to 3 episodes, I was actually really enjoying it. A lot of the stuff was, you know, they'd gotten over it. Now they're enjoying themselves. They're having a good time. The characters are getting their own special spotlights, and the actors are doing good in those spotlights, and I'm enjoying it. So overall, with the 8 episode thing, I'd say I actually did like this live action remake. Yes, it absolutely could be better. They did get green light for the last 2 seasons. There's only 3 total, and I'm glad that they did. Hopefully they'll learn from that. The series greatly suffers from the problem that you and I have talked about with all these streaming shows, is that their outfits look spanking new off of a cosplay shelf. Like, they were all 3D printed and stitched that morning. And no matter, they'll fall into a puddle, get up, and their outfits are still sparkling clean, you know, and you're like, or they just went through a great big battle and none of their hair is messed up. Every day they go on a year-long trip and they have perfect haircuts every day, you know. I just don't understand production crews sometime, and makes it look really out of place. Not like a real world. Looks like they're on stage for the whole time.
Right.
That was real disappointing. But I liked it. The big thing I do want to come away with it, I bagged on it a lot, is that with 8 episodes, I was a little concerned that they wouldn't be able to get the characters through like they do in the series, because there's so many more episodes than there are here. But they really did. They really hit the highlights. They actually spent like 3 episodes on some what might be considered side characters, unnecessary characters from the series, but they brought them in and they still had them, and they gave them like whole episodes for just them. And I'm like, wow, I did not expect them to do this spirit episode. And they really did. And it was really good. And it meant stuff, because it meant stuff in the animated version, and putting it on here, they translated well, you know, that character's motivation or who they are or why they're here. And I was like, oh, good. They actually made that character come in, and she's a bounty hunter and she's pretty cool. I didn't expect that to happen, and I'm glad they did. So all in all, thumbs up for it. They did a good job actually of translating the story and the spirit of the anime series. Just some of the production and the directing, I would say, is sophomorish at best. But as we see in Hollywood now, the CGI is getting so much better for streaming, and it was really, really good. Really felt cool, bending type stuff. Neat. So that's it. Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Thanks.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I don't... I considered watching the series. We talked about this years ago, but I could not stick with the original. First season was just too clearly made for kids. Yes. An audience that's not me. And so I thought, well, this might be a thing I could watch, to kind of get the story without sitting through the whole cartoon. But I had our buddy Fox, on the one hand, really enjoying it, but had a similar concern that I have with Wheel of Time, that he doesn't know how well it will translate to people who haven't seen the original. Mm-hmm. And a couple of my siblings who were kids when the original was on and really loved it, both watched a couple episodes and bounced off. And then when they found out the original creators left for creative differences, were like, yeah, clearly that's why it's bad.
I can totally understand that. And my advice would be, is I know it's hard, but stick with it. And I think when you take a step back after it's over, you'll appreciate that it was there, that they did it, right? It is.
Sure.
I don't know. Sometimes you can be disappointed by, oh, they didn't get the feeling of what it was before, a book or a show or something else, or a reboot. And I can appreciate that, but I think it was, first off, it's better than the film for sure. When I had said earlier that when they started out in the first three episodes, 100% would have wanted to bounce as well. And I think watching it with Sydney helped me stick with it. She actually kind of liked it overall. She likes things a little bit better than I do, but I was really curious about how people who hadn't seen it, like Fox, you know, if they really liked the story. And I think he said he did like it a lot overall, which is meets a new audience. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, I know he watched and enjoyed the original. So.
Oh, did he? Okay. I would recommend, because right after that, we got done watching that and Sydney started watching. She does what Sydney tends to do. She'll come and she'll sit down and put on a movie on the projector or on the TV and do crafts or Legos or kind of things where she's just kind of working mm-hmm. all the time. So she was doing that, and she put on right away, wanted to watch some more stuff. So she put on Cora, which is the follow-up series. Yes, and I had said years ago, that's her kind of film. It was made right out when she was that age and would have been perfect for her and much more in her, that age range for her, not kids, you know, mm-hmm. and she never did, but now she started watching it and she's like obsessed watching it so much now. I would recommend, honestly, that's one I would recommend for you to watch over Avatar The Last Airbender. I like Avatar The Last Airbender the best, but again, I liked it. I watched the whole thing when it came out. I watched it with kids type stuff.
Sure.
And I do think it's a great story and great anime, if I would recommend something like that for you, it would definitely be Korra. I like Korra a lot. It's really good. It has a little bit of a, what's the Harry Potter writer?
Rowling.
Say again.
Rowling, J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling. It's got a little bit of J.K. Rowling problem and somewhat J.R.R. Martin that I don't think they have an outline, and they just are kind of writing as they go along and world building and doing some great stuff. And they're like, oh crap, we've got one episode left. We better finish the story.
Right.
And gotcha. So it has that problem, but it's worth watching. It's not terribly long. And it's pretty, pretty cool. And the characters are really compelling and more, they have almost more anime to them in their characterizations, I guess, than what the Last Airbender had. And now that she got me to watch all season one, I'm going to go back and watch the other ones again. I think there's four of that series, four seasons. But yeah, good Korra. Korra would make a good one to remake, because it wouldn't have to have necessarily young kid actors. They don't have to be 12. They could. I think Korra is like 18 or 19 or something like that, mm-hmm. which is good. Okay, what else do we got here? I have something on my thing on our list here. It says Shapes. Is that you?
Yep, that's a Steam game. I picked up, they had a sale, I don't know, a week or two ago. I played the demo of the sequel, I guess the right word, to this game about a month ago. It is a puzzle, kind of a, do you know what I mean if I say Zachtronics?
I do not.
Okay, that's a game developer who makes these sort of puzzly kind of games. I've only played one of them called... Can I completely space on the name? Anyway, the sequel game is in 3D. The original game is not. It's flat, top-down grid paper kind of thing.
Okay.
How do I describe this? You played enough Factorio to know about like belts
and yeah, yeah.
splitters mm-hmm. and stuff. So this game is like that. There are patches of resources on the board, on the graph paper.
Okay.
And there's a building in the middle called your hub. And it sort of walks you through these sort of tutorials that are like, okay, we want you to get 50 circles into the hub. And there's no person, you know, you don't have a little character or resources or any of that. You just drop buildings down and conveyor belts. And so you put an extractor building on the on one of the squares that's in the patch of because it's a grid. It's squares, I know it's confusing. So the there are circles, right? Those are the shapes. And there's a patch of squares that have circle symbols on them. And all the shapes are 2 by 2 in a square, right? So okay. A circle is made up of 4 quarter circles.
Okay.
And you put an extractor on there and you connect a belt to it and circles come out. And then you run that belt into the hub and the circles run along the belt. They go into the hub and there's a little tracker. You can pin the things that you want on the side and it'll show you your progress. Like, okay, one's gone in, two, and you want to get to 40. And then you can level up and you get a new thing. You get new machines. And the machines will be like, here's a machine that will split a shape in half. And your next challenge is to get 50 half squares. And the orientation matters. So the first one will be easy. It won't matter. You'll put a splitter. It'll split from top to bottom the square shapes. You'll have one shape that is 2 quarter squares on the left and 2 quarter squares on the right.
Okay.
And you put a little trash on the ones you don't need and you send the rest into the hub until you check it off. Then the next one wants a quarter circle in the bottom right corner. So you take the regular circles, you cut them in half, you rotate the halves, then you cut those, and then you rotate the halves again until you have just all of your pieces are that quarter circle in the bottom right, and you feed all those into the belt. And then eventually you get colors, right? So there are patches on the board that are the three primary light colors, right? Red, green, and blue. Not like paint colors, but like screen monitor colors. And it'll say, okay, for this one, we want red circles. So you get the circles, you put them into the painting machine, you put circles in one input, you put the paint in the, you put the color in the other, and then red circles come out. Then you can mix colors. So it wants like fuchsia, right? Pink, like you take the red and the green, or the red and the blue, and you mix them in a color mixing machine, and then you use the coloring machine on that. Then you get stackers, where you can take, you know, it'll want a square with just the top left quarter square missing, right? So it's like an L-shaped square, a backwards L, whatever.
Right.
And to do that, you have to cut some squares in half, cut some other squares into quarters, and then use a stacker to put those back together in the right shape. And you send those into it. And then maybe you want like a star on top of a circle. And the circle has to be blue and the star has to be white. To get white, you have to mix all three colors. So you have to mix two of them to get fuchsia or yellow. Is it yellow? Yeah, yellow. And then mix those together with the third color to get white. And then you paint the stars white, you paint the circles blue, you stack the stars on top of the circles, and you put that on a belt going into the hub. And I've explained most of the game at this point.
It's like another factory game, but like puzzle factory game.
Kind of. It's just puzzles. And it does this, there's like one main goal that's your thing to upgrade, that or not upgrade, to unlock, that'll give you a new machine. Like eventually you get a splitter that has 4 outputs. So it takes your square and spits out all 4 quarter squares, and then you just have to figure out which one is which. You're like, okay, this one I want to rotate this way. One of the things that I did when I was playing last night is it wanted a circle that was like a I had a word for what this is. A circle that was white on two opposite corners and red on the other two corners.
Okay.
Right? So I had to like take the circle, cut it up, stack it back together so that I had the two, like a top left, a bottom right, and a top right, bottom left shaped circles. And then send one of those through a line that colors them all white and another one that colors them all red. And then both of those into a set of stackers to put them back into that shape. Because there's a main objective that will unlock a new building or something, a better version of an existing building. Like the first rotator you get only goes clockwise. And then once you unlock a new level, you get another version of that that rotates the other way, or counterclockwise.
Oh, okay.
And then while that's happening, there are upgrade categories. So like one applies to the belts, the underground belts, and the splitters or something. And one applies to the cutters, the stackers, and something else. I don't know. And those will have multiple objectives. Like pass in, you know, 300 normal squares and 300 half circles, and then also 300 yellow stars or something.
Okay.
And so you just go from one thing to another, like adding more things. You're like, okay, what am I not feeding into the hub already? Like I've got circles going in, so I've got to get these corner squares. And then you look at the shapes, you're like, I don't have that going in yet, so let me pin that so I can go find the right shapes that I need. And you know, sometimes you can't get a full shape. Like what you need is a full shape. There's one that's sort of like a pinwheel. It's like four trapezoids in the corners.
Yeah.
But there are no resource patches that have that by itself. There's just one, or at least not that I could find. There's just one that has it on half. The other half is a normal, is two squares. And so you have to cut them all and then flip one half of them around, rotate it twice, and then stack them back together. And now you've got the full shape, and then you got to color it red or whatever. And you just go from like one task to the other. There's not a lot of depth to it, because that's really all it is. Like the shapes get a little more complex, but I haven't seen any that are more than three layers. And like three layers is pretty complex. Like you do all those things. Like I was describing the thing with the red and white circle. There's that one, but it wants a green star on top of it. And that's two layers. And I had one that was three layers, and I don't think they get more complicated than that. But it's a fun kind of like, I don't know, puzzle-y game.
Yeah.
The
factory games are kind of puzzly games anyway, right? Like mm-hmm. That's what makes them fun, is the, you know, working through the, how do I get this, the copper line over to the smelter line to the factory line. Yeah. It's, you know, it's that puzzle scratching part of your brain that's fun as it is. And that's kind of what I say about Transformers. Like one of the reasons I like Transformers is not just because they're two things, but it's a puzzle that you get in the middle of them. And I like, just like working the puzzle, you know.
It's a good comparison.
So, yeah. Very cool. Don't have a few things left here today. I started watching Vox Machina, and I know I'm late to the game on that one. But I've never watched, I know this is going to be hard for people to hear from me, but I've never watched the, what's the acting D&D that they do? It's like with actors and, it's the same people.
Critical Role?
I've never watched Critical Role.
That's the thing you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've never actually watched Critical Role. And I know this is the anime of it. Is that correct? Because again, I'm not looking anything up in the background or who these things are, or people are trying to. I have no connection to this character. Is this actor? And I watched it during Critical Role, or if that's the same story, I have no idea. I just know that it's based on Critical Role.
I don't know if I've talked about this before. I have a dumb reason for not liking Critical Role.
Yeah.
I watched one episode, and yeah, I think Vox Machina is an animated. It's connected to that in some way. I don't know any of the specifics because it didn't interest me.
Yeah. Well, it seems
But I know a lot of people love it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm like five
Dummy,
or six
dummy.
episodes in so far. I kind of like it. I think I could definitely tell it's got like some D&D characters to it. Like all these characters are wildly different from one another and would never be in a party together. Like just like a D&D table. You sit down and they're like, we make our characters completely independent of each other, where occasionally two people might sit down together and like, hey, let's make us brother and sister. And then they share a background or something like that. But for the most part, D&D parties are just completely disparate people with different motivations and stuff. And for some reason they're working together. Right. And
Sure.
Vox Machina feels that same way. There's something like eight or so characters in the party. And I have no idea why they would all be together. And they don't really tell us. They just start out that they're all in a party together, which again feels very D&D-ish. So from that standpoint, I can tell that this is based on a D&D campaign for sure. But throw that out, which took me like two or three episodes to get past. I like the animation of it, the anime part of it. It's pretty good, pretty cool. The characters are drawn pretty neat. I use the word pretty. And the characters are so varied that it makes it a little interesting to than a normal and thought out logical anime might be, in that, what does a silly, goofy bard who's just, a womanizer type person, and that's his whole thing to do, how does that mix with a super serious gunslinger who has parents were killed by vampires and he's just dour and stuff, and they have to interact all the time because, it's a thing. How does that mix? And because all of the characters are so incredibly different, that makes it pretty fun to watch in general because they have to interact all the time. And
Sure.
so far, it's not been in an aggressive way. It feels like a lot of these things would like just by nat in a real world type thing, they would get on each other's nerves and not like each other, the characters. But because it's a D&D type thing, you just got to get along with your friends, and it's the point to go towards a thing. So where that dour, goth kind of type guy would never give that bard a light of a day, he does because he's part of the party and he's playing being played by one of his buddies, right? And that the show kind of has that feeling to it too, is that they're all gonna be friends and they're never gonna be mad at each other, or they're going to work through it, or whatever they're going to do, because they're really a D&D party. It's what they have to do. It's kind of like an unwritten said thing, which is different than I've seen in a lot of this stuff. So I like it. I'm not saying that I'm going to be like, oh my God, watch this whole thing forever, things, but so far it's a nice little thing. It does have some like adult type stuff in it. Like they use F-bombs all the time and
Sure.
talk about cod pieces, but it's like D&D, adult D&D stuff. Again, I do not think that it's going to make me want to watch Critical Role. Again, I'm not knocking Critical Role. That's fine. I've never seen it, but I don't really have a desire to see it. And this show is not making me want to go see it. But I'm enjoying it as much as I would enjoy a general anime action kind of character anime. But when I really want to watch a real anime, I'll sit down and watch like Delicious in Dungeon, which I'm still watching that as it goes through.
Yeah, it's still going. I thought it was done because Furin finished a couple weeks ago, or not like a week ago. I'm
Yeah.
like, man, what am I gonna watch now?
It's over on that one. No, I'm picking up Shogun, which I was going to watch this week, or start watching this week, but that's my next show to watch. I said I finished The Gentleman. I already talked about that one before. And finished Avatar. I knew that was going to come up this week because we're going to binge watch Avatar. But no, my next one is reserved to watch Shogun, and hopefully we'll catch up for that one. I'm ignoring all other comers up to this point. We
I
have
mean, I just realized having IMDb open that that new Fallout series starts in like 2 weeks.
Is it a series?
I guess, yeah. I thought it was a movie.
Wait, are you serious with like wait, are we talking, we talk, oh, I'm thinking Borderlands. Okay, right. Fallout. Yes. Okay.
Borderlands, I think, is going to be a movie.
That's a movie, right? I think I liked Borderlands better than Fallout, but we talked about this already, and I'll watch it.
Sure.
But yeah, maybe there's room in my life for two series at one time, but hopefully Shogun will be close to being done by the time I really catch
Yeah,
up to it.
it's only like a little over halfway, so you'll get caught up and then only have one episode a week.
Yeah, that's pretty. That'll be great to watch that one. So that's my next show to watch. And like I said, I'm not entertaining any other things, Netflix or Paramount Plus or anything. You people just step back off. I am almost finished with four seasons of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think my after I finish Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I absolutely adore, it is my casual put on the background show is going to go back to Deep Space Nine again because I took the break a couple weeks and I'm going to go back to it. And the season five coming at the end of season five, and it's time to hunker down and get into the Dominion War, and then that series will end and I will have completed my New Year's resolution. So, and again, I hear that's the best part of the show is the last seasons. Would you say that that's generally of Star Trek in general, the last seasons are the best seasons?
I don't know if I would say that.
I'm trying to think of ones that would be
I
not
don't
that.
know. I mean, the original series was all over the place. Like, I think its third season had a couple of the best and some of the worst.
Sure.
Next Generation, I think, peaked around like seasons five and six, four, five, six, something like that.
The Borg time when Picard got the Borg,
Maybe,
maybe.
maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have a good sense for what happened when.
Sure.
I've not seen through the end of Deep Space Nine, even as I was, going by list, sort of cherry picking episodes, something else more, something new came out while I was in the process of that, and I never went back to it. I did get to the end of Voyager and liked that ending. I mean, I guess if you like the stuff with Seven, then Voyager gets better toward the end.
Yeah, I think Voyager in general, the last season was a little down compared to the rest. And I only say that because that's when they started regularly communicating with the Alpha Quadrant. And like
Yeah.
it felt like the show was them making their way
Lost
home. But
some of its magic,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, they were all, they were already even if they like at that point when they're sending voice messages and talking back and forth through the Alpha Quadrant. It's like, well, why even come back? I mean, I know why they want to come back, but I mean, for a viewer, it doesn't matter whether you are in the Vulcan space or the neutral zone or in Earth space. There's no, re I don't can't tell distances between those things.
Right.
So whether they were in the Alpha Quadrant, Delta Quadrant, or whatever, if the point was is that they didn't have help from Federation, other Federation people. And then all of a sudden they did. So, yeah. But I liked all the way up through the season right before that one. That's all I got, man. We did good this week. We're going to end a little early, I think.
Yeah, the only other thing I did, I probably won't get into all the details of this, but I bought some gear to try doing projector
Oh, yeah,
screen
your projector thing
watching
now. Yeah.
stuff in the camper. It sort of works. I want to do some tweaks, and there's a spot on my screen that I don't know if it's in the like I brushed off the front lens of the projector with a Q-tip and it's not going away, so I think it might be something inside. It's a very cheap projector, so I might just try to return it to Amazon.
Right.
But I am still watching The Expanse. I think I'm getting close to, let me check. I know exactly.
Are you watching it on your projector now?
I watched one episode on the projector. I'm just up to episode 10 of season 5, which so I'm almost done with season 5. I remember which you means, saying what, you.
Yeah, which, mean, you which means when you get, when, would, when you get to six, when you get to six, triggers my okay.
When I would start, when I would start season 6, and I wait, also I watched.
I have a big piece of advice for that. Don't start watching it until Shogun's over. So.
Nice. But I watched an old movie. I watched the original Planet of the Apes.
Original? Wow. Like Charlton Heston?
Charlton Heston and...
impressive.
Roddy McDowell.
Very impressive.
It's the latest pick in our movie club. And... yeah, I watched these. I don't know if I watched all of them. There are like 5 classic Planet of the Apes movies. I know I saw several of them.
Yeah.
I did not remember it being so allegorical.
Okay.
Like even within the premise, which I mean, I guess spoilers for a 50-year-old movie, more than that, almost 60-year-old movie, that he's on Earth the whole time, right? It's Earth well in the future, like 2,000 years in the future, and somehow the Statue of Liberty is still there.
Right.
But like, even beyond that, even the, like, oh, you know, the Cold War failed and they nuked or whatever happened, and, you know, humanity are back to being primitive, unable to talk, you know, kind of thing, and the apes rule the world. There's also all of this, like, conflict between faith and science in the ape culture.
Yeah, yeah.
That I did not remember from watching it when I was, I don't know, 15, 16.
The Mark Wahlberg version delved into that a little bit. I don't think the modern ones do, but.
Okay. So like the one in between. Because the modern ones, it's a completely different premise.
Right.
That the, you know, the apes rise like in present day, not 2,000 right. years in the future.
Right.
And I also remember being a teenager thinking that the ape, like, makeup prosthetic stuff was really good.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, for the late 60s, it is really good.
Yeah, but it was not bad. The fact that it's still, all practical type stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's they got stuff glued to their faces. And I'm like, that clearly is not his real mouth. Like, the lips don't move or anything. But you know, again, for it's impressive for the time.
Yeah, it really was. I thought, and I remember seeing interviews like on late night shows with the actors would come in their full costumes and they talk about it, and I was like, wow, wild. It's just wild. The new movie coming out, by the way, now that you've watched that one, the Charlton Heston character is supposed to make their finally making their appearance. In the modern series, it's a female, though. Semi spoiler from the trailers, which you've seen in the trailers, which is people like me who've been waiting for a long time for basically the timeline to catch up to where the first Planet of the Apes started.
Taylor,
yeah, Taylor.
The Taylor character. I don't mind them making that character woman, because the original movie has a ton of casual sexism.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's a character who's like a sort of poor man's version of the Raquel Welch character from 10,000 BC, whatever that movie's called.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one from the poster in Shawshank.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Right. They've got that kind of character in this one too.
The furry bikini, like, there's a human female who Charlton Heston just takes around with him everywhere. She never talks. I'm like, yeah, ooh, this is
it's his woman. Yeah, the clan, right?
His female, as the apes say.
Yeah, the in this one, they cringy. In the modern one, they one of the reasons I like the modern one is that the originals, which I just loosely watched and, you know, enjoyed for the overall idea of them, had a good idea, but, you know, like you said, there's the sexism. It wasn't really fleshed out a lot, but it had some neat ideas. It just kind of didn't feel like a completely thought out or realized world. And I wish they would have been more. And these new modern ones started obviously from the beginning and just slowly built the entire world up to where it finally is now. And we can see the Charlton Heston character come in and Taylor. And now we know how the world has got to the point. And it's going to be neat to see this person come in and know the world as we know it and be like, what is going on? Oh my God. You know, right. And because of that, we know why things happened the way they did and why they are. And we have a lot more sympathy for the apes and that they're, I don't say they're human, but they feel more human and actual characters.
Sure, sure.
And then also we know why they've got to the point now in the modern series that the humans are caveman-like, which you see in the Charlton Heston type stuff, because the virus, the simian flu, mutated. So it killed off people, and people were immune to it, lived. So there's some humans, but the simian flu mutated, and it caused apes to be able to speak better, like it affected their genome, and it caused humans to kind of basically de-evolve, where they don't think the same way. They're kind of Neanderthal ways.
Oh, it's like that episode of Next Generation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they de-evolve. So that's why humans, when Taylor comes down, is going to see humans be caveman-like status. And we know now it's because of the simian flu type stuff that just kind of happened over a couple generations, which is neat. So I'm looking forward to that one. And, you know, I should probably go watch that original Heston one. I'm glad you mentioned it, because every time I think about watching it, I'm like, I know it's going to be disappointing. And then my nostalgia is good for it right now. And I maybe want to just keep it that way. You know, keep it in rose colored glasses.
Sure.
All right. I think what we got, buddy, I think that's all of it.
All right. You've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 343. Thanks always to our friends at LRM Online. You can check them out. Our buddy Fox has reviews on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Got that right this time. And the new Roadhouse movie.
Roadhouse.
I've not heard great things about, but I never saw the original. Who knows? If you want to reach out to us and tell me everything I'm wrong about Renaissance, I guess, Disney films, you can do that via email. Our address is frontporchpod@gmail.com. You can go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, and find contact forms to reach out to us. I will put links in the episode to the movies and other things that we discussed. If you enjoy the show, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you'd leave us a favorable review, please appreciate that. It helps out a lot in the rankings. As always, thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Night, everybody.
See you next time.